Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 12th of June, Anno Domini 2010, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, choose,
Before we get into the news and all that, I got to tell you folks, it just started last night, you know, us being on a jazz station here.
Right.
Got to tell you, went down to the jazz festival last night. Jan and I were working the jazz festival, meeting and greeting folks. And, oh, my God, what a riot that is. I mean, I got introduced to the jazz last year, sort of got my appetite wet. But it is way too much fun. You folks, if you haven't ever gone down, you got to go down. Some of the free concerts, even, are just fantastic. And, you know, it's not – I ran into a couple other folks that sit there. Well, you know, I'm not into jazz.
It's not just jazz.
That is the whole thing I was trying to tell you. You look at the list, and it isn't a long and an extensive list of folks that are coming to the Jazz Fest. If you can't find something there, you just don't
you
like music
and
at
jazz,
all.
Jazz has such a wide range from fusion to classic to
unbelievable.
Rockabilly.
Yeah, exactly, and it's there's some great stuff. Gladys Knight and
she was
a whole bunch
phenomenal,
of
and that was really wild too, because like I say, I like to go down and people watch, and the diversity of folks. I mean, coming out of the Gladys Knight show last night, you saw them dressed to the nines, to you know the jeans. I guess it's fashionable now to have the ripped jeans or that type of stuff. You paid money for it.
Yeah, you paid money to have them pre-ripped. When I was a kid,
I could do that myself.
Yeah, when I was a kid, we just wore them until they ripped.
Right.
And then wore them a little more.
Yeah, there's some great stuff. Everything from big band. I mean, the New Horizons big band is going to be playing. It's a whole bunch of stuff going on. Really, if you think that there's no music for you at the jazz festival, you're really not paying attention.
You don't have a clue.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I would say that you should check it out. It goes on until the 19th every night. Jazz 90.1 will be broadcasting live every day, so you really need to go there. And in fact, it's just terrific. If you were to go there this afternoon, the Smugtown Stompers are playing. How cool are they?
Booker T and the MGs are coming up next week.
A bunch of the high school jazz bands will be playing. Mm-hmm. Billy's Band, if you're a Tom Waits fan.
Yeah.
They're the Russian Tom Waits band. It's very weird, but you'll love them. Just a whole bunch of good stuff going on every night. So I would check it out if I were you. RochesterJazz.com is where you go for that. And, of course, we, as in Jazz 90.1, will be there every single day, live in the evening. Stop by the booth.
I'll be down there again with Rob tomorrow.
Yep.
From 5 on. So, like I say, I wound up just having a great time. We were there, got there around 5:30, didn't leave until like 10:30, quarter of 11 last night.
It's a great evening.
Oh, it was. Perfect evening, too. The weather you couldn't have asked for any better. And it's supposed to be great all this coming week.
Yep.
So, you know, you say Rochester doesn't have much going on, you know, get out and check it out.
You know what? And this clearly shows that God is a jazz fan. Because when we do the golf, it's always raining. And Lilac Festival usually happens the week before. The flowers are best the week before, the week after. But it's nice for the Jazz Festival. So clearly God says go down to the Jazz Festival, no question. Go down and have fun. It's going to be great. This is going to be an odd show today, and I will admit that. I broke a tooth yesterday. So last night in Second Life, I want to apologize to all the folks who were there. We do a thing in Soundbites, on Soundbites in Second Life every Friday. I was a little out of it because of the painkillers. I did not take them today because I had to drive here and do this show. So I'm in a little bit of pain. So if I'm a little short-tempered today, please, everyone, forgive me. But Maybe I'll have a rant later. You never know.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Let's start with the news. A new study suggests that online porn, oh, suddenly Steve is awake, is one of the most hostile environments on the internet, but malware distribution itself appears to be only a profitable sideline for the adult industry. Some of the findings made by the academic team at the International Secure System Lab in Austria correspond to what most that they have the coolest research in Austria, don't they?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you surfing for porn? No, it's my job, man. correspond to what most people think they already know about online porn as a business. Online porn is highly profitable, despite the fact that most content is given away free as part of a complex and layered traffic trading system built on buying and selling visits. 92% of the sites detected as being porn sites by the researchers' web crawler, yeah, that's how they did it, offer free content and function as marketing and hit-generating systems for the 8% either selling or acting as processing systems for expensive adult content. Interestingly, a large volume of free sites use a range of techniques to render users potentially vulnerable, including blind linking, JavaScript caching, and website redirection. The motivation for all this chicanery is mostly to exploit the user to generate extra and unintended traffic to benefit the site's owners, but the potential is obvious. Porn sites are ripe for malware exploitation, even if that possibility is only taken up on occasion. Using a honeypot analysis, the team calculated that 3.2% of 260,000 sites they looked at were distributing malware. Speculatively, the reason could be to do with money.
Well, only that few?
Yeah, right. Well, do the math. 260,000, 3.2% is still an awful lot of porn sites. And those are only the ones they checked, right?
Yeah.
Here's my favorite part of this. Speculatively, the reason could be to do with money. You think? Malware distribution generates cash, but it's not in the porn industry's interest to become overdependent on a business that would see them quickly blacklisted by malware engines. The team also set up its own porn hub in order to analyze the deep economic structures of the industry. Yeah, with little apparent credential checking, researchers were able to buy the traffic of 49,000 unique visitors from third-party sites for an outlay of only $161. A demonstration of how easy it is for porn webmasters to find an audience. 20,000 of these visitors had Office, PDF, or Flash vulnerabilities that would have allowed them to be infected with malware, and 1,000 visitors showed evidence of having already been infected with a range of malware. We conclude that many participants in this industry have business models that are based on very questionable practices that could very well be abused for malicious activities and conducting cybercrime, the authors say. So our poll of the day, actually the poll is a little misleading. The number one way to get computer viruses is illegal downloads of what you think are music, actually. Yeah. But the poll that I wrote says online porn, number one way to get computer viruses. And your choices are, well, I'm safe then. Really? Huh. I think I'm safe because I have a Mac and Penguin Power. Surf without fear, baby. So far, we have 40 people. 50% of you think you're safe. Good for you.
Hey, more business for, you know, us repair places.
That's exactly right.
It works for me.
That's exactly right. The real problem here is not that you go to the porn sites. It's that you go to another site that has a link and a connection to a porn site in the ads, and they catch you there. At any rate, once you're done taking the poll, I know you've got more to say on this subject. So look at the little yellow box underneath the poll, and if you click on the link that says, give us your opinion, it takes you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Where you can enter your opinion, and please keep it clean. So far, we've got 5 people who've done that. The question is, what ineffective method do you use to protect yourself online? And if you want to discuss this, of course, you can do that. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Operator is standing by. Steve?
So one of the interesting jobs I saw a show on is about the piracy that happens in the porn world, and the big porn companies are as anti-piracy as the music companies and the record companies. So they hire people to scan the porn sites looking for stolen porn.
Nice.
So this is our company's movie, and this other website is showing it without permission, so we'll send them a cease and desist letter. So stolen porn is a big issue.
Many, 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 many years ago, I got a call from a guy in California. He said, a friend of mine told me to call you. He says, you know a lot about computers, and I need some help. I said, sure, what are you doing? He says, well, you might not want to help me. I said, why not? He said, well, I'm setting up some porn sites. I said, uh-huh. And he said, you know, I don't know who to go to get any information on anything. So I gave him a couple of leads because I'm a nice guy. I'm not going to involve myself in the industry, but I'm certainly going to help somebody ask Peter a question. He sent me a very, very large check. And this was about a year later. I get this check in the mail, and he says, thanks for all your help. I just wanted to share a little bit of the wealth.
Yep.
And I thought, this is a little bit of the wealth? I'm really in the wrong business.
Well, that was the joke for so many years, is how to make money on the internet was porn or write a book about making money on the internet.
Right. Right.
Although the irony is there's so much free porn, why would you pay for it?
Well, but that's the point. Most of the porn that I talked about in the news item is free.
And it's ad-supported like every other webpage.
Well, and it's cross-trafficking.
Yeah.
You know, they've got ads for other porn sites, and they're, you know, it's a per click on the other porn sites, and one out of 10,000 people clicks on them, and they still make hundreds of thousands of dollars a month.
Yeah, when you have millions and hundreds of millions of people on the internet,
right?
That 1% return for a postal direct marketing can turn into a 0.1%, 0.5%,
right?
And you still make a lot of money,
right?
On the
exactly.
Internet.
All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Ruth. Where are you calling from, Ruth?
From Ontario, New York.
And how are things out there?
Very good.
And what can we do for you today?
When I run. My AVG, the dance in safe mode.
Right.
All the files that AVG tests come up locked file, not tested. So they're not testing any of the files. What could that be?
What user are you logging into when you run it in safe mode? You're probably logging into your own username. You need to log into the administrator account in safe mode, which then gives administrator access to see all of the files on the computer.
Where do I find that?
Safe mode. When you boot into safe mode, it comes up to a login screen, and there'll be a user for the administrator and an icon for your normal user.
So okay, because I don't log in at all when I go on the computer.
Then you're not in safe mode. When you boot into safe mode, you always get a login prompt to log into the user you've created or the administrator user.
Do I have to put a password in there?
Yep.
If you've created a password for the administrator user, yes. Most people haven't created an administrator password, so you don't need one.
Well, and by the way, you should. It's dangerous to have an administrator account without a password.
Well, I've always done it before, and it always worked. It always checked my files.
It probably did, but there have been a number of upgrades that tried to make Windows a little safer.
Mm.
Or you may have been infected by something that's preventing the anti-malware programs from running.
That's certainly true. If you can't check anything, what I might suggest you do is try a different antivirus program. Let me suggest you do Panda. Hold on a second.
Pandasecurity.com.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Which antivirus program are you running now?
What, Windows?
Program are you trying to run?
Oh, I run AVG free.
Mm-hmm. It may be that something got past AVG, and running a different program to scan your machine would help. The Panda Security Antivirus or Avast Antivirus. And you may also want to look at some of the anti-malware programs like Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware.
Yeah, I have those two on there, too. I run those, too, when I go on to safe mode. Yeah, I run all of those.
Okay. Well, if you're booting into safe mode, you should get a login screen before you get to the desktop, and you have to log in to either your normal account or the administrator account.
Okay. Now, what password do I put in? The one that
The password that you created for that administrator account.
Okay.
If you didn't create one, then there is no password, and you should create an administrator password. That's how a lot of the bad programs get into the computer, because most people don't make a password. So it's very easy for the bad software to get in.
Now, let me suggest that you go to free.pandasecurity.com.
Okay.
You have two choices. One is cloud antivirus and the other is active scan. Choose cloud antivirus.
Okay.
And what that does is actually, now you want to run that in regular mode, right? Not in safe mode. But what that does is it actually runs your antivirus from the web so that A, we know it's not infected with anything, and B, it can't be infected with anything, and C, if that finds some stuff that AVG's been blocked from.
Okay.
It's also free.
Okay.
And there are two choices there, Panda Cloud Antivirus and Panda Active Scan. Well, actually, there's more than that. There's a whole bunch of other stuff there. But the one you want to use now, right now, is called Cloud Antivirus.
Okay. Cloud Antivirus.
And Steve is going to put up a link to that. It's free.pandasecurity.com.
Okay. Free.
And that's it.
Pandasecurity.com.
Looks like that's it.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Yeah, it's I've just discovered Panda. It seems to be really quite exceptional, consequently, I'm beginning to play with it, and I think it works nicely. And certainly, in a situation like this, it's a good choice. Going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, each and every one of you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites right here on the magnificent, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Sound Bites, celebrating 20 years.
Hey, honey, she's all fixed. Want to go for a spin?
Sure. Honey, what's that in the back seat?
Oh, that's just the 23 pieces I had left over.
Time for a new vehicle? Well, Jazz 90.1 would love to have your old one. Just call 966-5299. Jazz 90.1 will pick it up, plus you'll get a tax deduction.
Is that 966-5299?
Yes. Donate your old vehicle to Jazz 90.1.
Honey?
I'm already dialing.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Tavern 58 at Gibbs, located at 58 University Ave at Gibbs Street, only 100 yards from the festival's big tent. Tavern 58 features steaks, chops, seafood, and fresh pastas, along with a broad selection of draft beers, including Brother Thelonious Ale, wines, whiskeys, and single malt scotches. Tavern 58 will be open every day of the festival, with outside and indoor seating, late night dining, live music, 10 p.m. till. Tavern 58 also provides shuttle service and plenty of parking during the festival. For more information about Tavern 58, you may call 546-5800 or visit tavern58.com.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by the Radisson Hotel Rochester Riverside. The Radisson Hotel is located along the Genesee River in downtown Rochester, adjacent to the Riverside Convention Center. They offer standard rooms and suites, a heated outdoor pool, sauna, fitness center, and wireless internet access. The Radisson Hotel is also within walking distance to all of the Rochester International Jazz Festival concert venues. For more information, rates, and to make reservations, you may visit www.radisson.com or call 546-6400.
Look at all these bills.
Oh, we need help.
Credit counseling can offer relief. SESI Debt Solutions can show you how. We're a not-for-profit organization with a track record of helping people get out of debt and stay that way.
It says they'll work with our creditors to reduce interest rates, eliminate late fees, and lower monthly payments.
Don't face your debt problem alone. Call 888-829-7801. That's 888-829-7801.
Hey, this is Derek Lucas, host of The Spectrum. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, We are Soundbites, and we're going right back to the phones in just a minute.
We'll try that one again.
Do we have somebody on the line here? The theory is our caller is Dave. Where are you calling from, Dave?
No, Dave, that was the beeping sound.
Oh, that was the beeping sound. Sorry. We don't have the beeping sound, so Dave's, once again, we lost the caller. Our Dave is now going to check the other Dave, and I don't quite know who he's bringing in at the moment, but we'll find out in just a second. Our caller is Dave. Dave, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Where are you calling from?
I'm from Bloomfield, New York.
Lovely Bloomfield.
Yep.
How are things out there these days?
Nice and hot today.
Yes, it would be.
Yep.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm looking for an audio equalizer program, but not one that comes with a audio editor that only works on files. I'm looking for one that's totally integrated into the sound system so that anything that comes through my speakers, I've got some kind of control over the tone.
That's built into the OS, isn't it?
Not that I know of. You typically have your inputs and your levels and, recording levels and stuff like that. But as far as I'm looking for, like, maybe a 5 or 7 or... band equalizer that you can really adjust the tonal qualities.
Hardware or software?
Software.
Which operating system?
Windows 7 Home.
Because I remember seeing an equalizer window in Windows XP.
But it isn't a big one. There's Blaze Audio Web EQ. That's free. They also have a shareware version for $20.
Mm-hmm.
There's Aces Jukebox, Aces with a Z, that's $15 shareware. But that's just a player. That's essentially its own audio player.
Yes.
Blaze Audio Web EQ says it's a real-time graphic equalizer for your computer, helps you optimize your PC sound system so your streaming or wave audio will sound better than ever.
All right, well, that sounds good as long as it works on real-time. Real-time.
Says it is.
Okay. Well, I'll give it a shot. It's, so far I've tried a few things, but they're all editor-based, and they don't really work on anything other than individual files that you might be editing.
Right. I understand that. It's from a company called Blaze Audio, but I guess if you just look for the, search it on the web, you'll find it.
Sure. Okay. That's terrific.
There you go. Good luck.
They have a 5-second demo on their website.
Yeah, right.
Or you can download a 14-day demo.
Well, that's the way to do it. You download the demo, you try it out. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but you've given it a shot, whatever. That makes a lot more sense to me. It always does. Thing about freeware.
It's a 10-band equalizer.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. All right, our next caller is Walter. Where are you calling from, Walter?
Greece, New York.
Greece, and what can we do for you?
Well, first off, I got to say a thank you to you, Nick, because last week you mentioned that you had loaded Puppy Linux on a laptop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we had been using an 11-year-old laptop running Zubuntu. But then when it went up to 10.04, I lost the parallel port, had to do some reconfiguring to get the dial-up, because that's what we need it for at times. So I'm really happy that Lucid Puppy is now Ubuntu-related, and I'm hoping that they'll do the security updates, which they didn't do before, even though I'm still running in root.
Right. I like Puppy. You do, there are some things that when you're running a lighter... operating system is not, if you're used to the more robust ones, you have to fiddle a little. But it's a great product.
Yes, it is. It is. So anyways, right to my question then, does anybody on your panel there have experience with those Ethernet networking through your power lines in your home? And, what's your feelings about it? And I'm wondering if you can, go from the modem, feed it into the power line system, and then at each of the outlets put perhaps a switch on so that you can use different computers throughout the house.
Yeah, you can, but
for the hassle of it,
it's expensive. The boxes are $100 each.
Yeah.
So just run your own wiring.
Yeah, so you need one.
In a hub.
Yeah, you need one box to put it on the power and one box to take it off the power every place you want to do it.
Yeah.
And Wi-Fi is a lot cheaper and faster than that. It's also a lot slower than Wi-Fi. I think they're pushing at 14 megabits mm-hmm. now, where Wi-Fi is 130 for Wi-Fi N.
It works, but it, you know what they say? It's like the tap dancing elephant. It's not how well it dances. It's the fact that it dances at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also remember when they used to also push it that you could do it over your telephone lines, too. And I was just... Yeah, it seems to me that system is dead now.
Well, that was in the early days when your network only needed two wires.
Oh.
And most telephone jacks had four wires in them.
Yeah.
And your phone line only needed two of them, so you had two spare wires.
Ah.
Now, modern Ethernet uses eight wires.
Oh, okay.
And so you just have to run new wires.
I have one law firm that's still running on the old two-wire.
Really?
Wow.
You want to talk about painfully slow?
Yeah, I bet.
I was ready to get them just tin cans and string. Yeah. Say, that'll be at least a little higher tech.
It's like 200 or 300K per second
those
days.
And they were wondering, gee, it is awful slow.
Yeah.
Well, no lie, Sherlock.
So, yeah, now, so 200 or 300K per second on the two-line systems. Now you can do a gigabit Ethernet on the eight wires, which is four twisted pairs.
Oh.
So you go from 200K to a million K. In, what, 10 years?
The big thing about it, of course, is that you don't have to do any wire running. You don't have to do any of that stuff.
Right.
And that's really where wireless has taken over instead. There are several companies. In fact, there's a big one in Rochester called Current Communications. They just can't service Rochester, which is annoying. And they are trying to do long-distance broadband over the power system. To be a competitor to DSL and cable. The problem is that every transformer on the power lines filters out the internet signal, thinking it's noise.
Right.
So every one of those millions of transformers has to get changed to let power go through it. So it's not an easy proposition.
Oh, well, great. Well, thank you for all the information. Again, thanks for Puppy Linux then. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Have fun. Yeah, I like Puppy. Again, you know, it depends on what you're used to as to whether or not you're happy with it. But I really like it. I'm willing to live with the limitations to keep 11-year-old hardware running. You know, it's the dancing elephant again.
Yep.
Although Puppy, really, it's fast, it's clean, it's easy to use, it's a pretty nice product. I'm very, very impressed. Works out pretty nicely. In general, I like Linux. It's all of those things, fast, easy, clean, etc. All right, our next caller, is this... Dar?
Yep. Colin Dar. Yep.
Hiya, Dar. How are you?
Fine.
And how are things in Toronto?
Yeah, kind of wet and miserable as usual.
My O didn't look like an A. I can understand that.
No, it's an O. It's clearly an O.
Yeah.
Tell me that's not an O.
It is.
It's triangle OV. It's all Greek to
me. It's not you. It's Dave. It's Dave. Dave has. I don't know. There seems to be a disconnect. Between his hands and his head, he writes. He's thinking Dar, and he writes, you know, chocolate or something.
That was fun. I can blame it on his last night at the Jazz Fest.
Clearly, it is.
Had too much fun.
What can we do for you, Dar?
A comment on Mr. Puppy Linuxer and the power line thingy.
Right.
Bill Mullins .blogspot.com or something. He's in Toronto. He's got a great tech website. And he broached the subject a couple of months ago. And the biggest problem with that is that the power setup screws up shortwave.
Yep. It would, too, because you're trying to drive a secondary signal through your power lines. And when you plug your radio equipment into it, you get a double hit, you know, because, as you know, wires, long stretches of wire are the definition of an antenna. And so when you send stuff through long stretches of wire, you're sending out radio signals. And they can interfere with shortwave all over the place. Absolutely.
Never mind independence people that disagree with what's happening.
Right, right. Exactly right. And unless you've got insane filtering on your equipment, you're going to be dragging that stuff in as noise into the radio itself through the power line. Absolutely.
It's funny how things really look good on paper, but the more you look at you see now I've got the same disease.
Mm-hmm.
except it's not transposing letters. It's a completely lack of words.
Yep. I have that. It's what I have is called anomia. A-N-O-M-I-A. It's an inability to remember nouns, specifically proper names.
Also known as nominal aphasia.
Also known as nominal aphasia. And
well, I guess we better start taking scads of pills, eh, guys?
Or we just start calling everybody, hey, you and honey.
Or...
I already do that.
I still remember when I was on the airlines one time, this one stewardess had a name tag. It was, hey, miss.
Very funny.
And that was her name tag. Hey, miss.
Well, I was walking through Midtown Plaza with my oldest friend in the world. I mean, I have known this guy since I was 3 years old. And we met somebody that I was in college with. And I said, Mary, I want to introduce you to my friend who lives next door to me. And of course, he knows I have anomia. So he wasn't going to help me. Because he's a friend of mine, and he just let me stand there dying.
I've got a cousin named Pat, and she would embroider her name on all her pants. And so, of course, we always asked her if that was instructions.
Right.
We had a very close family.
I would like to apologize to every single person to this broadcast, podcast, whatever, and we look forward to your emails. Thank you. That was Steve Ray, ladies and gentlemen.
R-E-A.
Exactly. Sorry, Dar. What else can we help you with?
That's it. Now my muscles, jaw muscles are tensing up from laughing so hard.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we're here, Dar.
Okay, cheers. Thank you, Jets.
Keep smiling.
Bye.
Makes people wonder what you're up to.
Exactly.
That's what I keep doing.
Exactly. Yeah, there have been a lot of those kind of schemes like Power over Ethernet, and I love the idea. I mean, conceptually, it's brilliant, but there's a lot of technical details that are not yet 100% fixed yet. So I would love to see something like that. But it's really kind of going to be usurped by wireless, you know, ubiquitous wireless that a couple of people, community-wide wireless that people are trying to bring in. There's also the fact that not here in the United States, of course, but in much of the rest of the world, the ubiquity and the cheapness of cellular service, they have true.
Because the U.S., they got the ultimate dollar, you know, everything's driven by.
Well, they have true unlimited Ethernet and cellular data plans, and they're ridiculously cheap. So there's no market outside the United States for something like POE.
Wouldn't it be cool, though, if we could get better plans through third world countries?
Well, and that's just it. In terms of that, we were talking about this last night. We're a third world country when it comes to cellular data plans. I have friends in Japan who are constantly amazed at how much we pay and how little we get for our cellular plans.
And they want us to pay more.
Yeah, of course they do. Because it's not that they're not making money. They're not making as much money as they'd like to.
Yeah, it's been a couple months and they haven't raised the rates late.
Right, exactly. Well,
because the economy's doing better. The government says so.
Right.
And just because the government says so, you know, they just put everything in stock into that, and it's like, hello?
And that's what comes up with the AT&T, rather, is changing their data plans now, and you'll pay a tiered amount of money for how much data you use. For some people, that's not going to be a lot. For some people, they simply won't be able to afford it. And it'll be interesting over the next 2 years to see who leaves and how many people leave. And I think the other companies here in America are waiting to see. Now, if somebody came out and said, you know what? We're going to pick a Japanese model. It's going to cost you less money and you get more. People would flock to that company and everybody else would have to follow suit, but nobody's doing it.
There was an interesting article on Stop the Cap the other day that MSNBC was highlighting Ontario County for the fiber that they're putting in themselves. And the county decided to just do it themselves, and they created a nonprofit organization to lay a fiber ring around Ontario County.
Yep.
And one of the interesting things that they mentioned is that the director of this system, the nonprofit organization, said that they're looking at a 25-year return on investment, where most businesses, when they want to put in something, they're looking at 3 years maximum to return on their investment. So they have to charge a whole lot more up front in order to get their returns. And then after 3 or 4 years, they're so used to charging that much that they just keep doing it. Right. Even though it's already paid for, they just keep charging that much.
Right, right. So, yeah, it's an interesting little problem. And we're not going to see a solution to that because it has a lot less to do with us and a lot more to do with, I want to say greed. I'll say greed.
Yeah, no, call it what it is. It is what it is. And, you know, like I say, they're not happier. You know, like I say, they just want to keep sticking it in, just like the government, you know, one more tax, and then they wonder why everybody's bailing out of New York State.
Well, I read an interesting blog piece about the FTC wants to put a tax
on the Federal Trade Commission.
Federal Trade Commission, right. They want to put a tax on consumer electronics to pay newspapers to stay in business, basically.
Yeah.
And it was just stupid.
I need a job where the government will pay me to stay in business.
Works for me.
I really need that job.
I've got a buggy company.
Let's start a newspaper.
Yeah, my horse and buggy company, it's failing now. People don't want to buy buggies anymore. I need some government money.
I make arbalests.
Mitchell.
All of a sudden, dozens of people are going arbalest into Google.
Mitchell and Webb did a great comedy sketch.
Google is saying, why is arbalest trending up? Yeah. What is that? All right. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, arbalest Smith extraordinaire, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, I'm Phil Dodd, and I think you'll like the mix of music I play every weekday afternoon. I play today's best artists as well as the classic performers who made jazz America's own special art form. I also feature the standards, songs that have stood the test of time and are constantly being reinvented by jazz musicians. So please join me, Phil Dodd, noon to 3, Monday through Friday, right here on Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by the 2010 Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival, June 11 through 19. The festival, now in its ninth year, will feature hundreds of musicians, including Herbie Hancock, Keb Mo, Michael Kayshammer, Jane Monheit, Chuchito Valdez, Janet Planet, the Allison Brown Quartet, the Adam Niewood Quartet, the Jacob Fred Jazz Odyssey, and the Pat LaBarbera Group. For more information on this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival, tickets, and club pass information, you may visit rochesterjazz.com.
I want to tell you about a
time in American history. So
it never repeats itself.
My family was ravaged.
Thousands and thousands died.
And then one day,
there was hope.
Before vaccines, there were few ways to help protect against deadly illnesses.
I never want my grandchildren to see what I saw.
Remember, vaccinate.
A public health message from the American Academy of Pediatrics with support provided by Sanofi Pasteur. Visit protecttomorrow.org.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Tavern 58 at Gibbs, located at 58 University Ave at Gibbs Street, only 100 yards from the festival's big tent. Tavern 58 features steaks, chops, seafood, and fresh pastas, along with a broad selection of draft beers, including Brother Thelonious Ale, wines, whiskeys, and single malt scotches. Tavern 58 will be open every day of the festival, with outside and indoor seating, late night dining, live music, 10 p.m. till. Tavern 58 also provides shuttle service and plenty of parking during the festival. For more information about Tavern 58, you may call 546-5800 or visit tavern58.com.
Hello, this is Joelle Van Buren. Join me weekday mornings from 6 till 10 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Matt from Rochester on the IRC chat at Pound Soundbites, or Octothorpe Soundbites, or Hash Soundbites, if you prefer, reminded me that you can go to Google, put in "Where is Chuck Norris?" and hit "I'm feeling lucky." That's actually pretty funny. That's pretty funny. All right, let me go to the back to the news. Apple, on Monday, Apple unveiled the iPhone 4, touting it as the biggest leap since the company's original model of 2007, which I believe is what we call hyperbole, and saying it would go on sale in the U.S. and four other countries on June 24th. This is more the kind of enhancements they usually do, and none of them is a blockbuster, but I agree it's the biggest step since the 2007 iPhone, said Ezra Gothiel, I don't care, an analyst with Technology Business Research. The debut of the iPhone 4 and the availability date for iOS 4, the new name for what the company has called the iPhone OS 4. Interestingly, as Steve pointed out last night in Second Life, both iPhone and iOS are registered trademarks of Cisco.
Licensed back to Apple.
Licensed back to Apple. But that was all done at the Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference, which CEO Steve Jobs kicked off Monday in San Francisco. Jobs covered several of the new smartphones and operating systems features, including a much sharper display, Apple's new iAd mobile advertising platform, and video capture and video chat. The last was saved for Jobs' now famous "One More Thing" near the end of his time on stage, his little Columbo moment, when he placed a video call to Jonathan Ive, Apple's head of design. "You know, I grew up with the Jetsons and video calls," Jobs said to Ive, "and now it's real." Dubbed FaceTime by Apple, the video chat feature works only between iPhone 4 smartphones, and during 2010, only via a Wi-Fi connection at each end. Probably because AT&T said, "Oh, hell no. We don't want that. We need to work a little bit with the carriers before video calling can migrate to cellular data networks," Jobs admitted. "They're positioning this as completely divorced from all other video chat that's out there," said Gotthile. "They're positioning this as something completely different from, say, Skype." Even so, Gotthile expects that Apple will provide video chat links between the iPhone and its desktop-bound Mac OS X client iChat in the near future. Apple wants to build a wall around its own ecology. The 32-gig iPhone will sell for $300, a 16-gig model for $200. Both will be sold by Apple and AT&T at their brick-and-mortar and online stores and at Best Buy and Walmart. Apple is also retaining the 8-gigabyte version of the iPhone 3GS, and starting June 24th, will sell that older model for $99. All iPhones sold in the U.S. require a 2-year commitment to AT&T service. AT&T, however, will waive its usual contract restrictions and allow any current subscriber who would be due for an upgrade any time in 2010 to purchase an iPhone 4 starting this month. Ready for a new iPhone? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Sean did. Where are you calling from, Sean?
I am calling from the city. How are you, gentlemen?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm confused, and perhaps I've come to the right place for some help.
I doubt that, but go ahead anyway.
Hey, that's what I love, confidence. Okay, I have a Windows 7 Dell, 4 gigabytes memory. One of my sons put in an NVIDIA video card, and it does not seem to want to recognize the 3D acceleration. That sound familiar to you at all?
Have you tried updating the drivers?
We have tried updating the drivers, and they are at the current numbers.
Two things.
Sure.
First, what NVIDIA video card did you install? Does it have 3D hardware acceleration built in?
Yes, it does.
Okay, second question. When he installed it, did he go into the BIOS and turn off the onboard video?
You don't have to.
Yeah, have, but you know what?
No, none of the new motherboards do you have to
All right.
Do it. Yep. That hasn't happened in about 3 years.
That's how long since I bought a new computer.
Enable the onboard graphics. That was much easier than previous Windows versions, but yeah, I did do that.
Now, I have to ask this question.
Sure.
Is the driver for that specific card, or did you install the generic NVIDIA driver?
No, actually, we went right to XFX's website and downloaded their prescribed driver for the card.
For Windows 7?
For Windows 7, yep.
It's not coming up with the answers we want or the questions we want.
How do you know it's not doing 3D acceleration?
And now, of course, I can't get it to replicate. The window that comes up, it'll tell me that I cannot get it to, or it, the 3D acceleration is not happening.
Well,
of course, I can't get it to happen.
When you try to run a 3D accelerated game,
yes,
that's when it should come up and tell you that.
Right, but there's a setting where, you know, and I apologize for not getting right to it.
Right, NVIDIA, what you do is you go to the control panel and run the NVIDIA, what do they call it? It's not called Control Center, I think.
NVIDIA Control Panel?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, I'm looking at it right now.
And that should tell you whether or not it is the special NVIDIA thing that it's the NVIDIA control panel is specifically designed for NVIDIA. You don't get it if you don't have an NVIDIA card, and it
right.
gets installed with the, you can install it with the drivers, and it has all the special bits and pieces that NVIDIA uses that regular drivers don't, you know, regular cards don't have.
Okay.
So that's where you look to see if it's working, and you should be able to turn it on there if it isn't turned on.
Well, I'm looking at the adjust settings with preview, and it's got the spinning little icon, and it says let the 3D application decide, use the advanced 3D settings.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's it. Let me check that. There's a little, well, no, I know there's a window that pops up, and I can't get it to do it right now, that says we cannot use the 3D settings, or it won't, the 3D settings won't start.
Well, I would suggest you in that control panel, you turn on all the 3D settings. Check the box that says use advanced 3D settings.
Okay.
It will then tell you whether or not there's a problem. And usually it will also tell you what that problem might be.
Okay, let's see. Okay, there's managed 3D settings, and it has a pull-down that gives you all sorts of programs that would be associated with the 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then for if I pick one, okay, it just grabs me. It takes me to a folder within the program. Oh, okay. I wish I could get the box to pop up. It
never happens when you want it to.
Yeah.
Are you on Windows 7 or
Windows 7 64-bit?
Okay,
and you got 64-bit drivers. Not 32-bit drivers.
Yeah, there was a choice of getting the 32 and the 64, and we did grab the 64.
All right.
Again with the wrong answer.
Well, anyway, that's what I would suggest. We're not going to stay on the phone while you look through all these choices.
Absolutely
but
not.
That's the thing where you want to do that. You want to go into that control panel and check to make sure everything is running. Somewhere in there should be a test button as well that will let you test 3D, and it will tell you if there's a problem and within certain parameters, what you might do to fix those problems.
Oh, okay. Beautiful, because obviously the manufacturer was less than helpful, so...
Surprise!
You might find that hard to believe, but...
I'm shocked and...
Yes, really, I'm in awe.
Well, gentlemen, hey, thanks for hopefully sending me down the right path, and keep up the good work. We love your show.
Thank you so much. That's what we love to hear. Thanks. One of the problems in general with all of Windows 7 is it's no longer just, you know, back in the days when there was only one version of Windows, well, there were only a couple versions of Windows, and they were all 32-bit, it was fairly easy to get what you needed. But as with the advent of Windows XP, they changed the way drivers are loaded and created.
Well,
they changed everything else, and now on top of that, you've got 64-bit. So now you've got to know which operating system you're running and whether it's 32 or 64-bit, and then you got to match it to the exact card you're running. So it's become a little harder than just install
the software.
Well,
like I said, you know, before, you know, I mean, back to the day, like you say, going back to Windows 3.1.1.
Yep.
You know, I mean... Since the systems out there, there weren't a big variety of motherboards, video cards. You know, I mean, we even had to put in parallel cards and, you know, serial port cards and everything. Now that's all integrated along with networking. And to have all this different combinations of sound cards, networking, and all this other stuff integrated into one board. And now you're also trying to get, you know, say, even an additional video card all integrated, and now getting the operating system to work along with it can be very daunting.
And yes. There's almost an infinite number of combinations of everything there is. It's, you know, it's actually amazing that Windows works as well as it does.
No, there's no question to that. You know, for all that we laugh at Microsoft, they did a couple of very, very amazing things.
They did fantastic. You know what I mean?
In the industry, you know, we wouldn't be where we are today if there wasn't a single place that most people were at. We wouldn't have a lot of the standards we have today. We wouldn't have a lot of the
and a lot of the standards were sort of defined by Microsoft and saying, if you want your hardware to work, make it this way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly. And yeah. we owe that to them. There's no question of that.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
All right. Our next caller is Steve. Where are you calling from, Steve?
Mendon.
Mendon, New York. How are things in
Welcome
Mendon?
Welcome to the U.S.
Thank you.
I used to do, there used to be a Grange there. I don't know what it is now. Next to the church. There was a Grange Hall, and we did theater there for years. What a great place Mendon is. What can we do for you, Steve?
Okay, I live too far off the road to get high-speed internet.
Yeah.
I have no DSL, and cable wants 7,000 to run it to the house.
Nice.
Such a deal for you.
And you're not willing to pay it, you piker.
That's what we were saying earlier. They want a 3-year return on their investment.
Yeah, so... my question is those USB type stuff like Cricket, and I think Virgin has one. Can I, if I run that into a laptop or a desktop, can I then use the Ethernet port from the computer to go to a wireless router to make it like wireless?
You can, but there are already devices pre-built like that. The Verizon or Sprint MiFi already does that.
Okay.
It's a cell phone to Wi-Fi bridge router, so that it creates a Wi-Fi signal from the cellular network, so all of your computers on Wi-Fi can get to it. If your computers don't have Wi-Fi, then you would go with an Ethernet-based solution.
Oh, right. Okay, but the question is then, do I have to have a Verizon, or can I buy that router and it works with anybody else's?
Well, you buy their router. If you can get it from Verizon, Sprint, AT&T, a couple of different places.
And then you buy a contract with that carrier, and those contracts are about $60 a month for about 5 gigabytes of throughput.
Yeah, I'm not too wild about that. That's what I was hoping.
The other, well, the other choice is satellite, Wild Blue, is it?
Yeah.
Is the satellite company.
Yeah.
There you're looking at about $100 a month for service.
Well, I was looking at Cricket, and I was looking at Virgin. I guess they got something for $20 a month if you use low throughput, which is
right.
What I would have.
Right. You also want to look at Clearwire. I don't know if they're...
Yeah, that's it. That's the Cricket one. I'm sorry. I got those two confused.
Yeah, Cricket is cellular. Clearwire is WiMAX.
Yeah.
So it's different.
So slightly different,
yeah.
But you can look at Clearwire at clearwirerochester.com. Take a look at the coverage map.
I'm just in it. It's actually on my property is where the end of it is.
Really?
So, yeah.
Well, then you kind of win. I would ask them to come out and check the signal before you buy.
Yeah, the farther away you are from it, the slower it's going to be.
Right.
So I would check that before I went any farther. But once you have that, it's fairly easy to set up any type of machine, a Windows box, a Linux box, a Mac, to share wireless with the rest of your house.
Okay.
But if you're doing Clearwire, I don't know
The last I knew, Clearwire gives you a Wi-Fi router.
Yeah,
so
I think they do, too.
It sucks in the WiMAX long-distance internet and gives you Wi-Fi short-distance internet.
Oh, I like that. Great.
Give it a shot.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Yep.
There you go.
And they're about, they're slower than cable or DSL. You get up to 2 megabit download maximum. But they are useful if you're out of the range of cable or DSL.
Right. I have a friend who has Clearwire, and he takes it everywhere because he's in odd places that
yep. –
You know, don't have a lot of coverage otherwise, but he's always inside the coverage area of Monroe County or Rochester, or whatever they call it.
I knew a guy that did that, but the Clearwire box is pretty big, so a lot of people a lot of people have been using the MiFi box because it's physically the size of a credit card. It's really really small
And as thick as about 8 of them. So
yeah,
it's not that bad. All right, our next caller is Dennis. Where are you calling from, Dennis?
The city.
Which city?
Our
New York.
Rome?
Look, I lived in New York City for years, and they believe they are the only place on earth who deserve the appellation the city.
I was listening to a podcast on the way to the show, and they had a question from Rochester, and shout outs to Central New York.
Yeah.
No. Western New York.
Look, anything north of Westchester is upstate.
Yeah.
So it's upstate.
I love the episodes of Law and Order where they drive to Attica and back two or three times in one day.
Yeah, right. In their supercars. Yeah. They do have flying cars. Where's mine? Yeah. What's your question, Dennis?
I've got a couple of desktops, a laptop. One desktop has Windows 98, the other has XP, and the other desktop has Windows 7. And I want to collect all the bookmarks from each of the Firefox browsers and get them all on Windows 7. Is that possible?
You can do it manually just by looking at the bookmarks.html file, but that's annoying. There are several programs, Nick and I are both frantically searching, for syncing your Firefox bookmarks between computers on your network.
Okay.
In fact, there's a plugin for it.
Xmarks.
Yeah.
Was the first one I found.
And that works across the Windows, different Windows platforms?
I think it works across operating systems, too. So it'll synchronize Firefox Mac and Firefox Unix.
Oh.
Right.
So it's a plug-in for Firefox.
Right. So it doesn't matter what version of Firefox, or rather what type of computer is running Firefox. It actually runs inside Firefox, called Xmarks.
Okay.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. So give that a shot.
Yeah, could you put that link up on your
Steve
site?
Steve will be putting that up right now.
Thank you.
Absolutely our pleasure. We are going to take a slightly longer break because it's the top of the hour, and I need to beat my tooth against the wall for a couple of minutes before I come back. That may not be the best thing I could be doing.
I was just saying, no, I don't think so.
All right, maybe not, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. Each and every one of you, you've only wasted an hour of your life here, so we're only halfway through that time waste for the week. Back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Streaming headlong into our second year on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1. We are Soundbites, and we will be right back. So stay tuned. Where do you think you're going anyway? It's Saturday, and you're listening to Soundbites.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, celebrating 20 years.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of the 2010 Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Folks, we're here in the supermarket to witness Mary Atwood breaking the frozen barrier. She's heading to the frozen fruit aisle. Mary has broken the frozen barrier. Now her cart is filled with items like antioxidant-rich wild blueberries. Hey, Mary, why all the frozen fruit and veggies?
Oh, because they're easy, affordable, and nutritious.
Frozen, fresh, canned, dried, and 100% juice. Learn more at fruitsandveggiesmorematters.org. A message from Produce for Better Health Foundation.
This is your Car Care Minute. Drivers are keeping their vehicles longer these days and will eventually need the services of a reliable auto repair shop. With that in mind, here's some tips on how to choose one wisely. Start shopping for a repair facility before you need one. Ask your friends and associates for their recommendations. Don't choose a shop based solely on location. Look for a neat, well-organized facility. The staff should be courteous, and the service technician or consultant should be willing to answer your questions. Look for evidence of certified technicians, such as the ASE sign. And when you do select your facility, reward good service with repeat business and customer loyalty. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and North Coast Brewery, makers of Brother Thelonious Belgian Abbey Ale. For each case sold, proceeds benefit the Thelonious Monk Institute of Jazz, whose mission is to offer the world's most promising young musicians college-level training and present public school-based jazz education to students around the world.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we continue to be sound bites, and you continue to listen.
Have too much fun.
Yes, we're having too much fun. All right, here's one of my favorite news items of the week. Looking to put a little more Minority Report in your life, or maybe you're just tired of smudging the screen on your Android device? EyeSight Mobile Technologies may have the answer. Touchless gesture control. Using a front-facing camera, EyeSight's touch-free tech gives the user control over basic functions without the need to actually touch the screen. An early demo shows a user navigating a picture gallery, sending SMS, and placing a call, all with swipe gestures performed several inches in front of the device. A second demo features pause and play control of a music player using a momentary hold gesture. While a few portable devices currently feature front-facing cameras, several upcoming Android-based devices are expected to. Because the touch-free solution is implemented in software rather than using a special type of camera, it should fare well on upcoming phones, in addition to new devices like Android-based tablets and music players. So our question to you, ready to stop touching your droid? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or of course, those of you out beyond the reach of the 585 area code, like our friend Dar in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, it's toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Operator is currently on the line, so if the phone is ringing, let it ring. He'll get to you in a moment.
That's interesting, because Microsoft has been showing this Project Natal controller for the Xbox at the last couple of video game shows,
right,
which is basically the same thing. You don't have a physical controller in your hand. It takes the Wii controller to the next step, because the Wii is wireless and has the accelerometers in it, so
right,
it knows gestures. But now with the Natal, it's just a camera looking at you that
right.
That,
but the,
that
the thing they're saying with this is it's much more fine grained,
right?
Because with Natal, it's big hand gestures and body gestures. Yep. With this thing, it's a finger moving. All right, our next caller is Angel. Where are you calling from, Angel?
New York.
I'm sorry, could you say that again, please?
The library, Central Library.
The Central Library in Rochester, absolutely. How are you? I'm sorry,
fine.
Lost.
Listen, I got a problem.
Yeah.
I accidentally, looking for free space on my computer, I accidentally uninstalled my printer. Now I'm having difficulty reinstalling it.
All right, what operating system are you running?
XP.
All right. So if you just unplug the printer,
okay,
reboot your system, and then plug the printer back in, what happens?
I haven't done that.
Do that.
Mm-hmm.
You may want to go into the control panel and make sure that there's no driver in there for this thing. But beyond that, that's really all you have to do. Just unplug your printer, shut the machine down.
But wait a minute, I plug it from where? The computer?
Yes,
or
yes.
The electricity?
Yes, no, from the computer.
Okay.
Turn the machine back on again.
The printer?
No, the computer.
My computer, okay.
Right, because you've turned it off. Now turn the computer back on again. Once it's up and you're back on the desktop, then plug the computer in, and it should find it. Ask you for the driver. I hope you've got the disk.
Yes, I do.
And then it should be not a problem.
Should be all set to go.
Okie dokie. I haven't tried it. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Let us know.
Bye-bye.
A lot of times the basic USB printer driver is built into the operating system, and only if you want all the extra features and the have it tell you when the ink gets low, you need the extra disk.
Right. And I hate most of that stuff. I'll be honest with you. I have been using HP printers since they came out. I think they're unbelievably, exceptionally good technology and absolutely the worst software I have ever used in my entire life, bar none.
Except for the LaserJet 2.
Well, I'm talking about the driver software, not the product.
But yeah. Well, even the driver software for
For that it was pretty good. But since then, man, they have gone way downhill.
And you know, it's nice to have a little message pop up on your screen saying the ink is low. But you don't need a big program eating up CPU and RAM to tell you that. You'll see that when the paper quits printing.
And I can't tell you how many times I've fixed a person's problem by uninstalling the HP Control Center.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh.
Just uninstall it and your problems go away.
Linux is the same way.
Yeah.
Lexmark.
I knew that's what you meant.
Lexmark.
Which is a shame because Lexmark printers used to be made here in Rochester. They had a big plant out in Victor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know that they still are.
Nope.
All right, our next caller is Ed. Where are you calling from, Ed?
I'm calling from Trumansburg, New York.
Trumansburg? Where's Trumansburg?
I've been to Trumansburg.
It's north of Ithaca, just 10 miles.
In fact, I was in Ithaca last week, I'm going there tomorrow. So I'll be going.
I went through Trumansburg.
Yeah.
Is that Berg with an E or a U?
With a E.
Okay.
No, yeah. So I have
I didn't mean to ask you the hard one. Why don't you ask us the question now?
Right. So I hope my question will be easier than yours.
Yeah.
I have an annoying problem with Yahoo when I use Firefox, and I'm on Yahoo with getting my email, and a window will pop up saying you've been disconnected from chat. And I never wanted to be connected with chat in the first place. So I'm wondering if you can give me some advice.
There's probably an auto login to chat option turned on.
One of the things that... Did you install the Yahoo toolbar?
No.
Do you have a Yahoo toolbar anyway?
Because they install themselves all the time.
Yeah, they install themselves all the time.
Well, I don't know what it looks like, so I don't know if I have
it. It's in Firefox, and it has some Yahoo-specific things on it. It's a toolbar just like the regular toolbars with, you know, you have your the toolbar that has where you type in addresses. Mm-hmm. Under that is the toolbar that's actually the bookmarks bar. And then perhaps under that is another one with some Yahoo-specific functions.
There's no Yahoo-specific toolbar.
All right.
And
in that case, go into
Y logo.
Right. It does start with the big Y logo. In that case, go into your settings for Yahoo and turn off chat.
So that's under tools?
No. That's inside Yahoo. I don't use Yahoo.
Oh, I see. Inside Yahoo.
Right. But the settings for Yahoo.
Okay.
We'll have that there. They're one of those people that assume you want to do all the things that Yahoo lets you do, whether you want to do them or not.
Mm-hmm.
And they default to on, and you want to default them to off.
Okay. All righty. I'll do that.
All right.
Thanks so much, and thanks for all the great advice you give to everybody.
Thank you so
much. Tell a friend.
I will.
Tell an enemy. We don't, whichever you got more of. tell them all. Why are we discriminating? The more people listen to the show, the less you have to listen to us, and the more you listen to the show. So that's what we need. Oh, Dave's got another one on the line. He's hustling as he goes along. And he's going to pop up Bodan. Bodan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. What's your question?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. Actually, it was a great week. I received a present from Microsoft, and it wasn't even my birthday this week.
What'd you get?
11 updates to Windows and the operating system and
Aren't
everything.
Aren't you special?
Yeah.
I feel as if I should maybe send them a thank you note or something. I don't know.
Some kind of you note, yeah.
Something.
But anyway, actually, I have a question in regards to super anti-spyware, since that is one of the elements that
sure.
you have on the Security Tango. Lately, when I've been dancing and I run the super anti-spyware, I'm coming up with an additional tracking cookie, which is making me reboot after I clean out the cookies. It's Adaware Flash Tracking Cookie, and unlike the other tracking cookies, which will just be, you know, discarded or quarantined, this one tells me to reboot the system.
Yeah.
Can you explain why am I getting an Adaware flash tracking? And actually, when I expanded the details, it says Macromedia Flash Player TremorMedia.com, which may be something. Can you give me a – but my question is, why the reboot?
And that's coming from Adaware?
super anti-spyware, and it's picking up a separate flash tracking cookie.
It's something that can't be deleted because it's running in memory, so it has to reboot to finish removing it.
And how do I,
it may
why does
say,
it keep on coming up? I mean, I can do this a couple days later. I'll run super anti-spyware, and it comes up again.
Yeah, it's. I don't think it says Adware. I think it says Adobe flash tracking cookie.
Okay, maybe I wrote it down incorrectly.
Yeah,
Adware may be finding it, but the Adobe flash cookie, you're going to a website with flash on it, and it's setting a cookie.
How bad is that?
Well, not horribly. What it's basically saying is you've come to this site and we're going to track you doing that. The big thing, of course, is that if it's an actual Adobe flash tracking cookie, then it's not necessarily set by the company, by the website you went to, but by Adobe themselves, so they can track all the places you've gone. So it depends on whether or not you want Adobe to know where you're going and what you're doing. You can set it, obviously, in super anti-spyware to ignore it, or you can keep deleting it, or you can... those are your two choices.
When I expanded the...
A or B.
The results, it did say Macro Media Flash Player, and then it had TremorMedia.com. Maybe that's a website I should go check out and see what exactly that is.
Well, Adobe bought Macro Media, which originally created Flash, and so a lot of places they haven't changed the branding to Adobe or not. But virtually every single page you go to on the Internet has Flash on it.
Yeah, I know. Airlines, and, TV stations, everything.
Right, everybody does. And the danger is that any one of those Flash objects can look at your Flash cookies and see other places you've been. And we're also hearing that websites, instead of setting a web cookie, are setting a Flash cookie because they know people are now becoming familiar with cleaning the cookies out of their web cache.
Right. In addition, Tremor Media is the number one company that puts those stinking, lousy video ads on every website you go to.
Okay.
And for those of you who are paying tiered pricing for your network access, that's bad because you're paying for all of that data.
I use a program on the Mac called Click2Flash, and there's plugins for Firefox, Flash Blocker, that will prevent Flash from coming up. Because a lot of the Flash content on web pages are ads that you don't want to see anyway and don't want to have to pay for when we start doing tiered internet pricing.
I don't know that they don't get downloaded, though. I've never really played with that. I do the same thing on my machine at work. I have a Flash blocker, so I don't see
it. It downloads and doesn't run them, maybe, instead of not downloading
them. Right, so I don't know that.
I haven't played with that. That I should be overly concerned about as far as being, my concern was why the reboot. That's the thing.
Well, it has to reboot because Flash is different from regular cookies.
Yeah,
it's running in memory, and the system can't kill it until you reboot and it's not running and protecting itself.
Gotcha. So that you've answered my question.
Well, there you are then.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Have fun.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I tend to set, and it's a pain in the patoot, I get that. I tend to set my browser to ask about every cookie.
Doesn't hurt nowadays,
But I don't know that that'll stop Flash cookies. I don't know that, actually. That's an interesting question. I'll have to check that out. Because I say no to almost all of them.
Whereas most folks get so click happy, they just go, yep.
Yeah. Well, that's why I read each one. If it's from a site I want.
You are rare. You are rare. Most folks just sit there. I'm sure Steve sees it the same way. You know, on a daily basis, folks just get click happy.
And a lot of times if you've learned about this problem and say no to cookies, the websites you go to don't work. Because you have to read and understand, this is a third-party cookie I don't want. This is a first-party cookie I do want.
Yes. You got to take the time. And I'm sorry. Well, folks, it's so complicated. Well, yeah, but, hello, it's also your identity that's going out there. And if you're just going to click, 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 click without taking the time, then you're going to get what you get. You're going to get ticked off because all of a sudden now your machine gets all reinfected. You bring it back into me. But it was just here 2 weeks ago. Yeah, so? You went back on the internet and 10 minutes after you're on, not even 10 minutes after you're back on, you're clicking away, going to this site and that site. You could be infected again.
We had a good one this week, too. Someone brought their computer back that had been, that was just repaired.
Mm-hmm.
It was January. But it was just repaired.
Oh, yeah.
And it's broken. It's still broken. No, it's broken differently and has a different problem.
Mm-hmm. Or it's infected again. All right.
Yep.
And
where did you go to get you infected?
You sit there and, you know, you clean out the machine. They take it. You clean off things like LimeWire and BearShare.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They come back 2 weeks. It's infected again. You know, this is getting a little tiring. You know, I feel that you should, you know, maybe compensate me. Well, let me take a look at it. We put it on the bench, and Sam, of course, pulls up the paperwork, and we look at it and what we did the last time. And sure enough, we had taken BearShare off. And guess what's back on there? BearShare is back on there. And we look at some files, and yeah, oh, it had things so messed up. And they call back, and so this should all be covered, right? I go, no. We took BearShare off before you got reinfected, and your machine is a mess. Well, I can't help it if my kids keep putting that back on.
Yeah, you can. You're the dad. Jeez and crackers. Be a parent.
No, these parents they don't want to. You know, they want to blame somebody else.
You know what? Don't be a friend to your child. Your child has 100,000 friends. They have one dad. Be the dad.
And then I
get... Jeez and crackers.
And I get, well, how am I supposed to stop them? You know, this is getting a little ridiculous and costing me a lot of money. I says, easy. Don't go on the internet. You know, I mean, if you need this for what you're saying that you need it for, then, get a separate computer, let the kids infect their own machine.
Yep.
Or go back to what we were talking about earlier, put a password on your administrator account and give the kids a standard account.
Where they can't install software.
Yeah. Yes.
That's exactly what you should do. That's what every parent out there should do. And when the kids whine and complain, tell them buy their own computer. The hell with it. I'm sorry, but I just, this is me with a bad tooth. I'm telling you right now, I love my daughter and more than life itself, but we had rules when she was younger. What the heck? All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Join us on Sundays 5 to 7 on Jazz 90.1 for Big Road Blues, an exploration of vintage blues spanning the 1920s through the 1970s. Tune in to Big Road Blues with host Jeff Harris as he digs deep into blues history, spotlighting blues legends and forgotten blues heroes. Along the way, he'll fill you in on the stories and history behind the music. That's Big Road Blues every Sunday, 5 to 7 on Jazz 90.1 with your host, Jeff Harris.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, presenting Red, White, and Boom, featuring the Marcus Roberts Trio, Saturday, July 3rd at the Constellation Brands Marvin Sands Performing Arts Center. There'll be fireworks after the concert. For more information, you may call 454-2100 or look online at rpo.org.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Golden Port Dim Sum and House of Sushi, located at 101 East Avenue in Rochester's hip East End area. Golden Port Dim Sum and House of Sushi will be open from 11:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day of the Jazz Festival. For more information, you may call 256-1780 or visit thesiamrestaurant.com.
At the American Lung Association, we're fighting for a day when we can all breathe easier. We're fighting for clear skies over every city and healthy lungs throughout the country. We're fighting to free millions of Americans from the addictive grip of tobacco and the devastating effects of lung disease. The American Lung Association isn't just fighting for air, We're fighting for all the things that make it worth breathing, and we can use your help. See what you can do at fightingforair.org.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit. Join me and the entire Smart Set tonight from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Friend of the show Chris Reich tells me that Miguel Diacaza says that under the just-released VirtualBox 3.2.4, you can virtualize Mac OS X on Linux. I'll have to check that out. I don't know anything about it except that. We'll see, I guess. In the meantime, here's an iPad story. AT&T is taking some well-deserved heat for a web security flaw resulting in the exposure of more than 114,000 iPad 3G owners' email addresses. Apple, by proxy, has also drawn some criticism, as it apparently has some culpability in defining the authentication method that was exploited. It is obviously a huge embarrassment for both AT&T and Apple, but the underlying issues and other web security issues like it are actually quite common. In truth, there's nothing elite about the iPad 3G data leak. In fact, according to an interview with security analyst Jim Jeffers, the security researchers more or less stumbled upon the authentication glitch. Jeffers said the exploit was almost discovered by accident. One of our employees is a 3G subscriber, and he noticed it in the process of the normal user experience of this device. It was something he just noticed as he was using it. Sort of like how finding and taking a car with the driver's door open, keys in the ignition and engine on doesn't make one an elite car thief. The lesson for IT administrators here is to be more vigilant about closing those holes and making sure the car door isn't open with the keys in the ignition and the engine on, especially for web-facing servers. There's an entire genre of hacking dedicated to finding sensitive or confidential data inadvertently exposed on the web. The book Google Hacking by Johnny Long and the accompanying online Google Hacking database lists hundreds of search queries that can be used to ferret out juicy information not meant for public consumption. It is actually not unique to Google. It should be called web search hacking, of course, but Google is essentially synonymous with web search, and Google Hacking has a better ring to it. So our question to you, worried that your private information was exposed by AT&T and Apple? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, and we will talk about that. There are a lot of those kinds of things going on these days. Google hacking's been going on forever. I used to teach a security course at RIT, and one of the things I would do is I would install LimeWire and then go search for documents, not for music. Mm-hmm. And I would put in, for example, password type document. And I would get hundreds of pages of because when you install something like LimeWire or BearShare, by default, it shares your entire hard drive, along with all your private information and files.
And people don't take the time to read again.
Yeah, they don't. And so consequently, when I would search for things, I would find, you know, I would look for the word confidential or the word private or the word password, and I would get massive numbers of files back. And it's something you really need to be careful of. So when you first, you should never install BearShare or LimeWire. You just shouldn't.
But it's illegal.
I know. Well, yeah, except there was it's not illegal. I want it for free because I'm too cheap to pay for it.
99% of the content is illegal.
Yes, that's the program isn't.
And I'm honestly, I'm really tired of arguing with idiots who bring out stupid,
stupid
excuses.
You only bring down
excuses
to their level.
That's right, and they beat you with experience. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to argue with the idiots anymore. You want to steal music, go ahead and steal it. But stop complaining that I'm calling it stealing, because that's exactly what it is.
And when your machine gets infected and that you got to keep coming
pay
back to
for
me.
It. Ha-ha.
Yeah.
But if you're going to install those things, at least don't be entirely stupid and go in and not share your entire hard drive. You know? And somebody stole my identity. Yeah, you know what? You kept all your credit card information on your machine. Well, you installed LimeWire.
And it's,
you're
again,
an idiot.
Taking the time to, you know, read what you're clicking on. Hello?
Right, right.
Jeez Louise.
People don't. They don't, you know.
No, they don't.
I want to get right to stealing music. Click, 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 click.
They just want, you know, everybody else to be responsible for what they do.
I was actually surprised. I was with a customer the other day, and we were installing Skype on her machine, and I was clicking because I've read those stupid license agreements
right.
So many times. And she stopped. Well, should we read that? Okay. My God.
Yes. Yes, we should.
We should. Mm-hmm. I know what it says because I've seen it so many times.
Right.
Before,
I've read it 10 times. Right.
Yeah. But yeah. And so now she's excited. She can chat with her friends around the world.
Oh, I love Skype.
Well, that's not going to be free for long. Rumor has it that Skype is going to start charging for Skype to Skype calls.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's why we're all going to go to Google Chat.
That works.
Which is the same exact thing. Video, audio. It's just the Google Chat thing.
Voice over IP.
Voice over IP. It's and video over IP. And it's just like, except on the Mac, of course, where they don't have the video yet. But you can do voice. You can do typing. You can do video.
Oh, and says they do. Video chat plugin for Mac OS 10.4 and later.
Yeah, I said Linux.
No, you said
no,
Mac.
You said Mac.
You said Mac, yeah.
Just as I'm going to download it and you say it doesn't work on the Mac, I go, oh, crap.
Yeah, because
well, it does. So Windows and Mac, but not Linux.
Yeah. Right. Not available for Linux.
Because that's how I talk to, you know, like a lot of folks like Dory and Tay and all those folks. The one person I won't talk to on Skype, I'm sorry. My sister's on it, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, she's sitting there trying, wait a minute. Sis, you live in the same city. Pick up the phone and call.
Right.
It's not a long-distance call.
Right. But I know a lot of people who maintain contact with people in other countries, family in other countries, over Skype. And they're now going to move to Google Chat. I mean, cheese and crackers, Skype. Get a clue. If somebody else offers exactly the same service for free and you're charging, they're going to go to the free service. I hate
maybe
to be
that,
the one to
maybe
tell you
that'll
that.
Wake them up, though.
Well,
I mean,
especially since it was free. You know, if you'd have charged for it from the beginning,
there wouldn't
be this backlash.
And if you could tell me for $10 a month or whatever it is, you get infinitely better service than I get, you know, higher quality, whatever, then maybe I'll pay the $10.
Yeah,
but you know what?
What am I going to get for it? Right, just not all of a sudden. Again, and this goes right back to, you know, us being a third world class citizen and country as far as internet service. You know, they're wanting all of a sudden, we can charge for this and start dinging folks.
And we've been dropping, too. I saw a chart this morning that the U.S. is currently 15th in broadband penetration. And speed and capacity this year. And in, was it 1990? We were number 4. So we're dropping drastically.
Oh, yeah.
We're dropping fast. Well, it's never, ever been about what's good for the customer. It's always what's good for the corporation.
Yeah, what's the bottom line, you know?
Never forget, there is no publicly held corporation in the world to whom you are a customer. If it's a publicly held corporation, the customer is the shareholder. You are the product that they provide to the customer. That's simply a fact of life. You don't have to like it, but it's never going to change.
And it's a lot different in Europe, where we see some really interesting differences in the way the EU laws, which are much more consumer-focused than the U.S. laws, which are much more corporation-focused.
Right. So, yeah, it annoys me and it bothers me, but, well, what's a mother to do?
Yeah, well, hello, it's a fact of life. And
and they don't have your best interest at heart. So
hell no.
That. So get over that. That's exactly
you believe that. I got some swamp land for you.
No, I bought enough swamp land. Thanks. I got some of my own I'm trying to get rid of. All right. Let's take one of our email calls, shall we? Our emails. Mike. Oh, Michael. How are you, Mike? Mike from Chilai writes, "Hi, Nick, Steve, and Dave." Hi, Mike. "For years, I've been refilling my laser cartridges at home with no problems at all. I'm thinking of recommending it at work. We have a Xerox printer and spend a ton of money on cartridges. In your opinion, is refilling cartridges safe for the printer? What are your recommendations?"
It's a tricky subject.
Yeah, that's a slippery slope.
A lot of the printer manufacturers all say that it's not good, but of course they would because they want you to sell to buy their ink and toner. There are a couple of decent, reputable national chains. Metro Cartridge in Rochester here has 3 or 4 stores around town. There's a couple of different ways you can do it. You can buy a refill kit yourself and refill your own cartridges, or you can go to a cartridge exchange shop where you take your cartridge in and you get another one that they've already refilled, which is faster than refilling it yourself.
Right.
What a lot of the places recommend, and one of the theories that are bouncing around, is that the toner and ink companies put some sort of abrasive in their cartridges to damage it during use so that it can't be refilled. So some of the places will recommend that you when you buy a brand new cartridge, you dump all the factory toner out and start over again.
Well,
I don't know how much I believe that.
Well, right. And there are some that that have a chip in them, that when they're empty,
right,
the chip trips, and now you can't reuse them. The printer will not accept them.
Yep.
As a cartridge.
So some of the refill companies will have a re-chipper.
Right. But that's the deal. Mike, the reality is this. You need to use high-quality toner or high-quality inks, because even if they haven't put them in intentionally, lower-quality products are more abrasive and will, in the long run, damage the printer. So you want to be very careful. That was one of the problems we used to have with the ribbons.
Yeah, re-ink the ribbon.
When you re-ink the ribbon, you want to add to that some WD-40, because original ribbons had a lubricant as well as the ink. And if you leave out the lubricant, you kill the printhead.
Never leave out the lubricant.
Never. Stop it. And from there, the obviously it's a slightly different case in terms of laser printers in particular. But you want to make sure that you use a high-quality ink. And in that case, I'm not entirely certain how much money you're actually saving at that point.
Yeah. Consumer Reports did an article on off-brand ink tanks and third-party ink tanks, and they found that the major reason that they're cheaper is that there's less ink in them, which actually makes them more expensive in the long run. Yeah, it's a $10 cartridge versus a $15 cartridge, but there's just less ink in it.
And there's also, and you can't compare that to, say, like the laser printers, the powder.
Right,
versus,
powder
you know.
Tone. And that was interesting. Some of the very early laser printers, what we now consider a laser cartridge is actually three separate pieces. It's the photoconducting drum, the optical photoconductor, and the actual toner reservoir.
Right.
And then the developer roller. So some of the early laser printers, each three or four of those pieces were replaced separately at different times. And so you'd go through, 5,000 pages and then put more powdered toner in. And then you go through 20,000 pages and replace the OPC. And you go through 50,000 pages and replace the developer. And consumers didn't like that. There were too many consumables to replace at too many different times. So companies started making a single cartridge that did everything. But the parts still wear out at different times, and that's why you can refill the toner in a cartridge, because the OPC is still good and the developer is still good.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But then those early printers that used powdered toner, when you were pouring that powder into the toner reservoir and it puffed and blew, there's always a cloud of toner that filtered away, no matter how careful you were.
You could always tell who had changed the toner, who had added
the
toner.
The kids used to come with rubber gloves because they knew it was going to spill all over you.
The best story that it was over at a client and working on the computer snap. And this is back many years ago. Changes going back. As a matter of fact, it was a LaserJet 2.
There you go.
And the person, is sitting there talking to me while I'm working on their computers. And they grabbed a new cartridge. And, they did the usual. She's sitting there and she's moving it up and down and, loosening up the powders to put in the new one. And then there's a tab. And she goes to pull the tab out.
Oh, yeah.
The tab came out, and evidently the little door that's supposed to shut, that sort of disperses the powder out, wasn't shut on that particular one. She's standing there, literally, arms out. She pulls that tab out like she's done probably countless times before, and just this wall of powder, black powder, comes down, and it's going all over this carpeting and everything else. And, of course, it's a beige carpeting.
Yep.
And she's standing there shaking it more. Instead of tipping it upside down, I turned it to turn it up.
Turn the other way.
Yeah. Oh, meanwhile, there's big cloud of powder going all over the place. People coming in, you know, and walking right through it. What's going on? What's going on?
Yeah, right.
Tracking it everywhere. I always used to hate it when that tab would break before the plastic came all the way out of the cartridge.
Oh, that's the worst.
Yep.
You really had to develop the
is a technique
pull to get that
consistent
out.
Pull.
We found some interesting tricks to make the toner last longer.
Print
less, yeah. A lot of the printers, well, actually, that's a thing now, that a lot of the printers will come with a toner saver mode. So if you're just doing what we used to call draft printing in the old inkjet days and impact days, if you're just doing draft printing, it puts less toner down. And when you want to actually print something you're going to hand out to somebody, you can use more toner.
Right.
But a lot of the toner cartridges have a little optical sensor on them. And when a light can shine through the cartridge, it says it's empty. Well, oftentimes it isn't, and most people know if you shake the cartridge, you'll get a few more pages out of it. Mm-hmm. Well, we found just tape that hole up so the sensor can never see light, and you can get a lot more pages out of it just by shaking it up again. And eventually, it doesn't work
at
all.
It won't give out.
But you can get 200 or 300 more pages out of most of these cartridges.
And one thing that I did was a whole study on the cost per page of our color printer versus our black and white printer versus the copier.
Yep.
And it's a heck of a lot cheaper to print one copy and then photocopy it.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Does the printer, the photocopier,
even black and white, giant tanks of toner.
Exactly right. And you know, it depends on your...
Yeah. Device dependent.
Well, and it also depends on the contract you've got with the copier company. But the way ours was set up, it was significantly cheaper to print one. And eventually, you didn't have to print anymore. You just sent a print job right to the copier.
Yep. When Xerox was selling a lot of the Phaser solid ink printers, you know, it uses crayons, which is more cost-effective than liquid ink and a little cheaper than laser, to use the solid ink. They had a deal going for a while where they would give you free black ink with every color box you bought. Because they wanted you to, of course, use that as your only printer.
Right.
And a lot of people will buy a black and white laser because it's cheaper for regular printing and then a color inkjet for photos. So it was kind of neat to get free black. I figure they just hide the price in the color. But
Exactly. Free doesn't mean what you think it does. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And that does mean what you think it does. Because we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit, host of The Smart Set, here with a special warning going out to all you Jazz 90.1 members. Stop smiling like that. Yeah, you love being a member of Jazz 90.1, but you're going to pull a muscle or something. I know the membership card is definitely worth smiling about, what with all those cool discounts at area shops, but frankly, all that smiling is making those non-members jealous. So until everyone's a member of Jazz 90.1, just try to control yourself and keep smiling safely.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, the answer to your computer questions on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Tavern 58 at Gibbs, located at 58 University Ave at Gibbs Street, only 100 yards from the festival's Big Tent. Tavern 58 features steaks, chops, seafood, and fresh pastas, along with a broad selection of draft beers, including Brother Thelonious Ale, wines, whiskeys, and single malt scotches. Tavern 58 will be open every day of the festival, with outside and indoor seating, late-night dining, live music, 10 p.m. till. Tavern 58 also provides shuttle service and plenty of parking during the festival. For more information about Tavern 58, you may call 546-5800 or visit tavern58.com.
Folks, we're here in the supermarket to witness Mary Atwood breaking the frozen barrier. She's heading to the frozen fruit aisle. Mary has broken the frozen barrier. Now her cart is filled with items like antioxidant-rich wild blueberries. Hey, Mary, why all the frozen fruit and veggies?
Because they're easy, affordable, and nutritious.
Frozen, fresh, canned, dried, and 100% juice. Learn more at fruitsandveggiesmorematters.org. A message from Produce for Better Health Foundation.
Jazz 90.1 is supported by our members and Agape Physical Therapy.
Agape Physical Therapy offers aquatic therapy at their Brockport location, the Gates Chile Hidden Valley Pool, and the Webster Aquatic Center. Using the Bradenco method of using water as physical therapy, Agape provides shallow and deep water exercise areas for partial and non-weight-bearing activities. Agape Physical Therapy's experienced staff offers constant care in treating the young at heart, non-athletes and athletes. For more information about Agape Physical Therapy, you may call 637-0790 or visit agapephysicaltherapy.com.
Hey, this is Rip Savage. Join me tonight for Fusion, 10 p.m. right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey!
What?
Interesting news item. Given all the hype, it's easy to forget that HTML5 is not yet a finalized web standard. That hasn't stopped Apple from posting a site featuring demonstrations of various capabilities of HTML5 and its related technologies, including CSS3. The catch? As long as HTML5 and CSS3 remain draft specifications, you'll need Apple's Safari browser to view any of the demos. The move has angered many in the web standards community who claim Apple's campaign actually undermines the very thing it claims to support, free and open web standards. In a heated blog post, Mozilla evangelist Christopher Blizzard blasted Apple for being not intellectually honest in its marketing by making it sound as if only Safari supports HTML5 today. Apple has stepped up its promotion of HTML5 in recent weeks, offering the forthcoming standard as an alternative to the multimedia capabilities of Adobe's Flash plugin, which Apple refuses to support in its iPhone and iPad devices. But according to Blizzard, the most important aspect of HTML5 isn't the new stuff like video and Canvas, which Safari and Firefox have both been shipping for years, but it's actually the honest-to-God promise of interoperability. By creating HTML5 pages that can only be viewed in one browser, he says, Apple is doing the entire web standards movement a disservice. Many of Apple's demos rely on, quote, experimental, unquote, CSS3 properties to work. The exact implementation of these properties has yet to be hammered out, so browser vendors must use their best guess to determine how they should be rendered on screen. This means web developers who want to use a specific experimental CSS feature must include the vendor-specific properties for each browser they want to support in their style sheets. It's a less-than-ideal situation, but the actual coding required is trivial. Apple chose not to bother for its HTML5 demo site. That would be bad enough, but Apple's demos won't work on Google's Chrome browser either, and Chrome uses the same underlying engine for its experimental CSS3 properties that Apple does. Rather than detecting browser capabilities and degrading the user experience gracefully where features aren't supported, as is the accepted best practice on modern browsers, Apple chose to deliberately screen out any browser that doesn't self-identify as Safari. That's right. By forcing your browser's user agent string to identify a Safari 5, you can view many of the demos just fine on Firefox 3.6 on Windows. Seriously, Apple? I thought we left elaborate browser detection scripts behind in the bad old days of the 90s. I can't imagine anyone would want to start up the practice again, let alone one of the leading companies in the development of next-generation web standards. This is simply low class, and I used to think you were above that. Do you care at all about web standards, people out there listening? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. I just think that's kind of low class, and it disturbs me.
Yeah. Although each... it's annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Each of the browsers tout themselves as the best, and they have their own website saying that they're own the best. But right. It's interesting now that Apple has joined that fray. Even with web browsers that support HTML5, Firefox 3, and Chrome, you can't see Apple's demo. Although the neat thing on Apple's HTML5 demo is a new trailer for Tron Legacy.
Assuming you're running Safari.
Yeah. Yep.
No, I think it's just low class. I'm sorry, but... I honestly thought Apple was better than that. I thought they would take the high road. Apparently, they're just another company.
Mm. Surprise,
I hate to say it, but I don't see them as being any better in this than anybody else.
No.
Not impressed. Not impressed at all. So, shame on you, Apple, for taking the low road. Although, like I said, what do you expect? They're just another company. You know, they're not the second coming. They're not something special. Like, people would like to believe that they are, possibly because they spent a metric buttload of money on their computers. But the reality is they're just another computer company, and that's all they are. Too bad. Too darn bad. But that's it. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. We could go back to the mailbag. We take the mail at sbytes at soundbytes.org. No, that's not something we should put on the air.
Well, while you're looking for that, I need to make an apology. At the Apple Cider meeting on Wednesday, I reported that our longtime Cider member, Myron Kearney, had passed away. In fact, he did not. Sorry, Myron. My apologies to Myron's family. longtime Cider member, Martin Sabbath, did pass away in May, and our condolences to his family. I got my Martins and my Myrons confused.
Well, I understand that. Myron, Martin.
Yeah.
Miriam.
Two of the three syllables are the same.
Sure. Absolutely. I fully understand that as a problem. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe. Where are you calling from, Joe?
Hey, I'm from Fairport.
Fairport, and what can we do for you?
I'm just shopping right now for a power supply, and it's for an older, not much older, like 2006-ish computer that doesn't have serial ATA connectors, and power supplies that are sold, say they attach a serial ATA. Do you think it would fit in an older Ultra?
No, they're different connectors.
Yeah.
But most power supplies have both the 4-pin Molex and the 12-pin SATA connector.
Yep.
Right. The old ones take the 4-pin Molex. It's four thick pins inside a white sheath.
Those are what I know.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Check out Frozen CPU in East Rochester. They have a lot of really cool power supplies and cases designed to run quiet and cool.
Also, another place, folks, forget about Goldcrest.
Goldcrest
is. Yeah.
What don't they have?
Yeah.
There's stores. Goldcrest is at the corner of Clinton and Goodman.
Their
store's a lot smaller than it used to be when it was on St. Paul. They have catalog internet warehouses, and they ship everything in, but they can find virtually anything you need.
Oh, right. He has done some, because I've got these screwdrivers that I love to use in the shop, and they're an unusual configuration as far as battery.
They sing to him. It's songs from The Lion King and Pocahontas. Not everybody has those, but Dave likes them. I'm sorry, was that supposed to be a secret, Dave?
Yep.
Smart ass.
I actually had to find a really
the
weird...
computer's alive.
I had to find a really weird screw a week or two ago. It's a Torx...
The tooth is getting you, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
The Torx Plus Tamper 6.
Was this screw a little loose?
Yeah.
No, I broke a tooth yesterday and... I did not take the pain medicine today because I wanted to be able to drive and do the show.
And it's showing.
Yeah, it sure is.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I'll check out those two places.
The other thing to keep in mind with power supplies is that some of the power supplies have a 20-pin main power tap. Some of them have a 24-pin main power tap where it plugs into your motherboard. Some of them will have a 24-pin where you can take the four pins off. So look at how many pins are on your main motherboard tap. And make sure your power supply you buy has that also.
All right.
See, if it was easy, anybody could do it.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for calling, Joe.
Just remember, yes, you can control your button on and off, but I have the ultimate control of the slider.
Is this thing on? Hello?
No, so you can go just like that and no more Nick.
Yeah, I know. That's the way it works. I get it.
Your mic may be on, but your volume is not.
Exactly.
Oh, speaking of which, the story we talked about last night, a poor lady a couple weeks ago when Google celebrated Pac-Man's 30th anniversary by putting a Pac-Man game on the homepage, and this poor lady had to call tech support because she didn't know how to get rid of it. And every time she turned her speakers on, she set her monitor, but every time she turned her speakers on, the music would play and she couldn't study. And so the tech guy was saying, well, it'd be gone tomorrow. And she said, well, that means I can't study today? Well, just close the window and go somewhere else. Well, I know I can go somewhere else, but this game keeps playing. She didn't quite get how to close that one window where the game was still playing. The tab.
She knew how to open other tabs, but she knew how to close tabs.
Yeah.
So she learned something new.
And then she says, have you gotten a lot of calls on this? And he said, no, you're the first one.
Here's your sign.
Well, you know what? Well, I won't go there, but that's the kind of thing. She sounded like a sweet little old lady.
We forget what people don't know.
That's exactly right.
That's why Yahoo.com is one of the number one search hits at Google.
Yeah.
Because your web browser defaults to Google.com's homepage, and you type Yahoo.com in the search field instead of the address field.
Well, on soundbites.org, the number one Google search is soundbites.org.
Yep.
That
people
works.
Search for soundbites.org and then click the top link, which is soundbites.org.
I bet you could use the I'm Feeling Lucky.
I bet you could. Absolutely. Give it a try. Steve's going to give it a try now.
Go to Google first.
Go to Google first.
Soundbites.org. And I'm Feeling Lucky. And
we're there. Look at that. There we are. How lucky can you get? But yeah, that's a lot of people do that. A lot of people only know to do that. One of the things I really like about the Chrome browser is that in the address bar, I can actually type a Google search. So if I were to type soundbites.org, of course, we just go to it. But if you type regular kinds of things, it'll just go there, and that's Google Chrome, the Chrome browser, will do that. So it's actually pretty cool. I've become more and more impressed with the Chrome browser. It's very fast, it's very clean. It now has all the plugins that I really need and want. So I'm pretty impressed by it. Nice little product. It's not to say that I don't still like Firefox or whatever, but This is a little different and a pretty nice browser. I'm using it more and more. It's also kind of lightweight. You can actually start it. There's a command line that I don't remember that lets you, when you start it, then you can actually decrease the amount of memory used and clear the memory cache as well as the on disk cache while you're running it and several other things. So it's even smaller. So,
cool.
It's actually pretty cool. I got to say, it's actually pretty cool. And there's a whole bunch of about things, about plugins as well.
I was going to say, it's got its fair share of the plugins for
about
the internet.
About histograms. If you type about histograms, there's a whole bunch of charts that it shows you about a bunch of things that that it did, like how much data you've used and. A whole bunch of other things. So it's actually very cool. I'm very impressed. I'm beginning to learn a lot more of the secrets of the Google Chrome browser. It's a pretty neat toy. I got to say that. So pretty impressed.
And they're all in ASCII.
And they're all in ASCII. Yeah, it's just an ASCII chart. It's very simple, very interesting, but it's about histograms, I think it was, right?
Yep.
All right, that's it. Once again, 2 solid hours of your life. Look, people, add it all up. We've been on the air for over 20 years, and you've been listening for a couple hours a week. Do the math. You're wasting so much time listening to us, and we're delighted and honored that you do. So thank you so very much. We are done for another week. We will be back here next week at noon for 2 more hours of you to waste your life. In the meantime, the Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival, you need to go there. You need to go and enjoy
yourself. I'll
be down
there again with Derek tonight from 5 to 7.
Because Dave has less of a life than you do, so thanks.
Come on down and say hello. I'll be down there, like I say, from 5 to 7. If you get a chance, come on down.
So for Dave Enright, Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.
Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.